Welcome to Authors First on the Artists First World Radio Network, artistsfirst.com. Tony Kay in the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone, worldwide. If you are an author, independent recorded artist, or have a great idea for a weekly show, we'd love to hear from you. Follow the links we have at artistsfirst.com to learn how you can gain exposure on our network. This hour, it's my privilege to introduce our guest, Jen Purcell, author of Saucy on the Side. You can find her information at www.jenpurcell.com. Tony Kay in the studio. Questions, comments, you can send them to dj@artistsfirst.com. I'd love to read them during the show. Let's give a warm Artist First welcome to our guest. How do you do, Jen?
How are you doing, Tony?
Well, I'm wonderful. Counting all of my blessings, everyone's healthy and happy, and things are somewhat in balance right now. I like it when that happens. So no earth-shattering events, no car wrecks, no hospital visits. Everyone, knock on wood, in good shape for the holidays. How about on your side of the planet?
So far, everybody's good in my house.
Yeah, all behaving themselves.
No, I can't say that.
Oh, okay. We had our moonshine, our Jack, and our three cases of beer, and our two turkeys, and our 25 guests, and we had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And audience, if you're listening to this broadcast decades from now, we're talking about Thanksgiving of 2011, November of 2011, and you may be hearing this broadcast a decade from now, and that's fine with me. Jen Purcell, she'll be still there. Her website will still be there, and she's a book. Her book will still be here. I think that's something really special. You've written something that you're proud of that is really a part of you that's sort of hidden, isn't it?
Well, I guess you could say that.
Wow, this is going to be a great show. Audience, I'm going to do all the talking, and then Jen will agree with me, okay?
Yeah,
you ready?
That sounds good.
Okay. Yeah, introduce yourself to us, Jen. Where do you call home, and tell us about your family and what's been going on over there?
Okay. My name's Jen, and I have three sons, Ethan, Killian, and Harry. They're little. They're 10, 8, and 7. And I'm married to a guy named Mike. He's pretty nice. Anyway, I live in North Carolina in a small town. You probably heard it's called Garner, North Carolina. That's where Scotty McCreery's from, you know, from American Idol. We're from the same town. I think he bagged my groceries once or twice. Anyway, we're living here. I work part-time, well, full-time, actually, as an emergency room nurse, and I write on the side trying to someday be able to quit my full-time job.
You're a nurse. My daughter's finishing her nursing program at the University of Akron.
Excellent.
Registered nurse, yeah.
Maybe she can have my job.
I hear you. It's a tough one, isn't it?
I like it, but, you know, you always want to, after 10 years of doing it, I'm ready for trying something else maybe in a couple of years.
Well, it's not easy work.
No, it's not, but it's an illuminating. It's, you know, you learn a lot, and you meet a lot of people, actually, and it's actually very busy, and I'm one of those people that really can't sit still very long, so it actually works well for me.
Wow, but so how do you find time to write while everyone's sleeping?
Well, what happened was my kids all started, my last one started kindergarten last year, and I picked back up the pen. I wrote my first novel, Saucy on the Side. I actually wrote it when I was a lot younger. I started it when I was about 27 or 28, and I worked on it in, I don't know, about 3 years, and then I couldn't get it published, so I kind of put it down and went to nursing school, and then when I was done with that, I had three kids in a row. So during that time, I wrote two more novels, but same thing. I just kind of wrote them, and then after you finish the first revision, you get so excited about it that you think it's going to be like this. Everyone's going to buy it right away, and you send it out, and you get rejections, and then you read it, and you realize it needs a lot of work. And then a couple years ago, when my youngest went to school, I decided that I was going to, you know, rework this first book and get it finally finished. So that's what I did.
Wow. You know, that, and Mike, he doesn't care.
Well, he does. Well, he's he doesn't care. The kids are at school. I mean, he's doing his own thing. He does sales and stuff. So during the morning is the only time I have free. And the way it works for me is I work second shift. So I get up around 10, write until like noon. I don't really write for more than 1 or 2 hours a day. And then I get ready, go to work till 3 in the morning, and then come back and do it again. But I only work 3 days a week. So the rest of the time, you know, I have a lot of spare time still at home to hang with the boys and stuff, but I don't think I could have got as much done if they weren't in school, put it that way.
Yeah, of course, and having that opportunity, but where, why writing? I mean, have you always had an interest? Were you a journal writer?
No.
An avid reader? How did you just take up the habit?
I know, that is kind of weird. Well, when I was, 22 years old, I moved to the Virgin Islands after college, just kind of for fun, and when I was down there, I decided that I was going to learn to read more because I felt like I didn't read enough at all, so I didn't get a television, so I didn't have a television for, I'll say, 5 to 7 years almost. I didn't have a TV. Basically, during the whole Seinfeld 7 years, I didn't have a television because the first
time
I saw
it. Did you end up buying the whole series, or are you just catching up?
I was at my friend's. I came up to visit. I was in Connecticut because I used to live in Connecticut, and I was in my sister's dorm, and I was sleeping on her couch. I'm like, who the heck is that guy on your wall? It was this poster of Kramer. And they said, that's Kramer. You don't know who Kramer is? I'm like, I don't know what a Kramer is. And I had no idea who he was. But now I love the show, and I feel like it's all new to me because I never saw it. But anyway, for those 7 years, I didn't watch any television. All I did was read, and I started writing, and I wrote my first novel. This book, Saucy on the Side, is actually my second novel that I tried. My first novel I wrote, and I finished it and kind of scrapped it after that. And then I came up with this idea when I was about 20, working in Boston. And then I just kept writing because I'm like thinking, well, sooner or later somebody, maybe I'll get better sooner or later. You know, that's kind of how it started.
You'd be surprised how often I've been called Kramer.
Really?
Yeah, and then my wife gets mad because she says, you're a lot better looking than he is.
I love that guy. I think he's hysterical, but it's amazing that I didn't see the show one time until it was over. I appreciate that story, and I think it's pretty cool. But yeah, so I was in Boston when I wrote this second book, and I was a waitress for probably 15 years of my life. That's kind of where the story takes off. It's about a restaurant guy, and what happened was I was in Boston after I lived in St. Thomas for what, 3 or 4 years, and I kept breaking up with my boyfriend, basically, and every like couple years, I'd fly up to Boston, stay there for two summers or for the summer, and then I'd fly back. We'd get back together, and I'd go back down. But anyway, every time I moved up there, I was broke. So I'd get a job wherever, and then I'd have to struggle to get some money in the bank, you know, so I'd get back on track. And I worked at this restaurant that was a really good place to work for money, but I didn't really get along with the owner that well. He didn't really like me that much. So one day, I was on the way to work, and I was just walking to work thinking, oh, my God, I hate this job. I want to quit so bad. But I couldn't really quit because, you know, I made so much money, and I was trying to get out of debt and stuff. So on the way to work, I was thinking, how can I ruin this guy's life? That's how I started thinking about this book, and that's kind of how the novel came about because I was thinking of ways I could torture my ex-boss.
Wow, that's a great idea. Well, whatever motivates. I mean,
I'm not really happy, but I had a laugh because my boss, like, a couple years later, I worked there actually for 7 years, but off and on, and every year we became closer friends, you know, and at the end of it, one of my birthdays, it was like my 29th birthday, all the girls went out, and we had a champagne party. We drank like a case of champagne, and we're out all night, and we were out at the end of the night. We were like the last few people at the bar, me and the owner, and we were talking, joking around, and I told him I wrote the book, and he was like happy about it. And I'm like, I don't know if you'd be happy if you read it, because it's kind of like bad for him, you know, but it's a funny story. I mean, it's not really funny, but it's very comical, and he was so happy I wrote a novel about it. I'm like, I don't know if he'd really be happy about it if he read it now, because it's kind of dark on his end, but it's kind of how it works out. Even now, I don't even know if he knows. I mean, everybody that worked there a long time ago knows, but I'm like, I don't know if he ever knows if it's print, because he's always comes in, he's like, when is that character going to be on in print so I can read it? I'm thinking, oh, I got to get a new job before he reads it.
Yeah, but, I like the way you word things. I got married soon after that, and boom, three boys, one after another, shot out of me like missiles and took control of my life.
So if you don't have kids, you wouldn't know. Do you have kids?
I have 5 children and 6 grandkids.
Oh, my God. Then you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know firsthand, and it's every
day.
You
have no kids. You think the best part is I wasted so much time. I mean, I could have broke off without probably 6 novels if I didn't have kids. But now that when you have, it's one of like, kind of like, if you want something done, you ask a busy person to do it. That's kind of how I feel now, because the more I do, the more I get done. I mean, before when I just had no kids and I had to just get up to get to work, I could barely get like a page done a day. Now I'm like, I've written 4 novels. I'm revising a book that I started last April. I'm on my 4th revision right now, and I paint. I work 40 hours a week, and I see my kids all the time. I'm like, I don't know anybody that gets more done in one day than I do, and I think it's because of the kids, you know?
That's true. Mother always gets everything done. The house is cleaned. Everything's cooked. The kids are in it. Everything's done. The man walks in. You know, he trips over his feet.
Well, kind of not like that in my house, I have to admit. My husband's been the get him to school every morning since we had kids, actually. Because since I work till 4 in the morning, he's a 6 o'clock in the morning guy. So thankfully for him, they get to school. Otherwise, that might have been a problem for me. I'm not very good in the morning.
Well, but you're a multitasker, and you found a way to compartmentalize your life. You know when it's time to write, when it's time to do other things, and somehow you've managed to fit in a tremendous amount of material in a short period of time. So obviously, you found some subjects that you're extremely excited about.
Yeah, I really started to like writing. The thing with the writing, though, is when I had this, after Ethan was born, my first son, I started rewriting this book. So I rewrote it again, and then I started another book about a funeral. It's a comedy, actually. And then after that, I decided to go back and rewrite this one, and I kept trying to get it published, and it's so hard to get published these days, I mean, unless you know somebody, and I really don't know that many people. And then my husband said, why don't you just self-publish? And, you know, when I started all this business, there was no such thing as self-publishing. And then kind of after kids, it's like I missed a few years there where suddenly everything kind of changed where you could self-publish your own gear, stuff, which is great and all. But when I made the decision to self-publish and I actually reread it, like I would read it if I was buying it. And I was like, man, this really isn't that good. So I spent the next year and a half trying to make it legible for my friends to read it. Because, I mean, I don't mind if a stranger reads it and doesn't like it, but the idea of a friend reading it and telling me it sucks. I was a little bit more worried about my friend, tell you the truth.
Oh, it is amazing how when you write something, you can put it down and pick it up later on. And either it's brilliant and you say, I can't believe I wrote that, or it's miserable and it's worse than you imagined.
Yeah, that's kind of where it was. And I don't think it's bad. I think it's actually, now that every time I pick it up, I pick up and read a page here and there, and I'm like, I'm pretty happy with it. Truthfully, I wish I had an editor. I mean, my friend helped me. My friend Diane in Massachusetts helped me. She did a good job, but what happens is I sent her 50 pages, she'd edit it, and then I reread it, and then I'd change things that I didn't like, not just the errors, but I changed sentences, and then that would develop more errors. And then you have to go through it again. So it's a painful process. I mean, I'm afraid to say, you know, thanks for doing it, because I don't want anybody to think that she edited it and that's how it came out. Because technically, she edited it, and then I re-edited, and then I, in turn, made a few more errors. I mean, it's pretty hard to edit a book, I think. That's the worst part about writing. I don't ever wish editing on anybody. I don't care who you are. It's like watching paint dry. You can read the same paragraph 15 times and miss the word the 20 times.
So 19 months later, lots of rewrites, agony, changing things around, finding mistakes, ultimately saucy on the side, and you're not ashamed for people who know you to read it.
That's right. Strangers, actually, I think strangers will read it. My friends, though, the problem with my friends is they keep trying to read into it and see if they know any of the characters, when all the characters are fake, except for one. My sister Peggy is actually the nurse in the book. The situations around her are fake, but she is the actual character.
Yeah, I like the way you did that. It's my sister, not me.
Well, my sister's a psychiatric nurse, and in this book, if you...
Say, my sister's the psycho. It's about her.
It's not. She's
she's not a psycho.
She could be slightly. We're all a little crazy, you know? We have a lot of us who are all a little nuts. Everybody knows that. But my sister's a psychiatric nurse, so in the book, there's a psychiatric nurse. So I made her the nurse, but the characters aren't real. And she'll tell me that they're not. Like, I always ask her, what do you think about my side effects? And, you know, she says some of them are good and some of them aren't so good. But I'm like, well, that's what it's going to be. But Peggy's actually...
You know, she could always co-author with you.
She wants to do one. She wants to do one about all the cars she's driven over the years. And I thought that would be a pretty good comedy because when you grow up with six brothers and sisters, you've driven... my first 10 cars, I don't think, cost $1,000 altogether. So she's going to start writing books about the different cars we drove. I thought that was kind of...
Yeah, and it only belongs to the person who has possession of the keys at the time.
Correct. And my sister once had stolen one of my cars. It was a $100 Civic I drove for like 2 years, and the alternator broke on the side of the highway, and she just left it there, and we never saw it again. I don't know what happened to it. The kind of cars we drove, but when you live in the 70s and 80s, you know, that's how it was. You'd get a car for like $100, and you were happy. You just drove it until...
Oh, yeah, until the wheel fell off.
Yeah, or if you could get it through, what is it, admissions. You had to get it through admissions, so that was always a little tricky. My sister once had a Century 21 sign as the floor of her car, and she had, like, a bike horn that she had out the window. And they said, okay, honk the horn, and she's honking the bike horn. And at the same time, they turned the lights on, and the lights were broken. So while the guy's looking at the horn, I was kicking the front light, trying to get the light for her, see if she could pass it. But I think it took her a few tries with that car. But anyway...
Yeah, that sounds like a great book. And, of course, there's usually, if you're a lady, a guy to go with the car. Or if you're a guy, lots of girls that go with the car.
Yeah, they all
have,
these cars.
You know, they all have a unique memory. But nonetheless, we digress. Audience, you're listening to Authors First, Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks for joining us from all points of the globe. And thank you, Jen Purcell, for supporting the arts, being our guest, and tolerating our humiliation this hour. If you'd like to learn more about our guest and, of course, buy the book, we invite you to follow the links we've provided at artistfirst.com. You can also get out there in the social network sites and truly humiliate our guest. JenPurcell.com, the website. Saucy on the Side, the book, and we haven't even talked about it, but, you know, I'm sure it's a great read. Tell us about the book.
Well, the book is about this this restaurant guy. His name's Tony Pedante, and he's basically, over the years, he's kind of pissed off a few people. It's about a little payback. Suddenly he's in court. The book starts where he's in court for a murder of a woman he's never met, and the book really isn't not really a murder mystery. It's kind of like, how could you possibly be going to court for murder over a woman you've never met? And it shows in a comical of errors and spiral plots how one thing led to another, and suddenly this guy who really had no intention of ever going to law school becomes a lawyer and then a restaurant owner, and then suddenly he's getting charged with murder of somebody that he's never met. And it's actually sounds dark, but it's actually kind of funny. And beginning of the book, you find out, you meet his girlfriend, and it starts out where he breaks up with his girlfriend, and the girlfriend comes back several times over the years. It's kind of like they keep coming back at each other, like trying to re-torture each other over the years for screwing each other over. And it's basically about payback. But I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain. It's kind of like a spiral theme, but it's pretty funny, and there's a lot of cool characters in it, and I think you'd really appreciate reading it.
Yeah. Now, did all of this come from your own imagination? How did you get started on that particular storyline? What prompted it?
The storyline was prompted when I was walking to work that day, and I was thinking of ways I could ruin my boss's life.
That's it. And then once you had
he was a restaurant owner, yeah, and then it kind of started. I'm
there,
like,
you
well. And then I was thinking, like, well, what could I do to ruin his life? I'm like, well, I could tell his wife he was having an affair. I could do all this, you know, this weird stuff that really wasn't true. But then you're like, well, wait a minute. I could go that further, and I could kill somebody and say that he did it, you know, and then you're like, but I'm not going to do that. It's kind of like started like that, and then it was dark, and then as you do it, I started reading it, and it was just really serious at first, and I felt like it wasn't funny enough, you know what I mean, because it's really more of a funny funny novel. Then, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. You see what I'm saying? But it started out as a chain of snowball of effects, and it's basically a waiter's revenge, because I was a waiter. So there is a waiter in the book that you'll see. He gets his share of getting back at the old man.
Now, do you paint a portrait of the facility, the restaurant, the people who work there, some of the clientele who come there? Are there interactions and other things going on?
Oh, there's a lot of things going on. He's got an ex-girlfriend that hates him. He also has an uncle that's kind of like a, he owns a fish company, and he's like a mobster kind of guy. And he's, when Tony wants to go to law school, he doesn't have enough money for school, he borrows money from his uncle to get into school, but his uncle makes him do a favor, and that favor comes back and bites him later on. And then that girlfriend that breaks up with him early in the book, later on, he gets back at her. And it's kind of like all these people that he's pissed off, and he gets them back sooner or later, he's happy about it, and then all of a sudden he gets charged with this murder, and he's like, wait a minute. And all these people that hate him are like, oh yeah, he did that. I know that because he did this. And like everything kind of built on, like one character would build on the next character. And next thing you know, it's like one thing couldn't happen until the next thing happened. It was kind of like a spiral theme. But you're like, wait a minute, if he never met that girl and didn't go to that place, and that next thing couldn't have happened kind of thing. But in the end, you're like, when you're at the end of the scene, it's like when you decide, it makes a decision whether he gets charged or not. You're like, how couldn't he be guilty? Because what happens is the real killer catches on to all this, and he kind of comes back into the story. So suddenly you got the real killer involved when he doesn't even know what happened. So it's kind of weird. And even if you took each character and you try to separate them, they'd have a hard time separating themselves because they don't know that they don't know the whole start of the story. They only know their little piece, and together the whole mirage makes them seem really guilty.
Wow, what fun. Do you have any favorite authors or films, or how did you come up with this particular model?
This, you know what? I made this one up on my own. No one's got me on this one, but I don't really have favorite movies. Books I like, John Irving. I like John Irving a lot. I thought he's really good.
Oh, I thought you were going to say John Grisham.
You know what? I did like John Grisham when I was a beginning reader. Because he's kind of like straightforward and fast, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he gets you going.
Yeah, and I did like the first few, but then after a while I felt like they started all sounding alike, you know? But I don't dislike him as a writer. I mean, he was one of my inspirational guys at the beginning, because that was one of the first books that I could read that I was like, wow, I read this fast, because I was a slow reader. When I was in St. Thomas, he wrote The Firm, and in The Firm there was a scene where they were in an island. I don't remember which island, though. Remember, and the girl takes pictures, if you ever read The Firm. But anyway, I did like, and I, you know what else I liked about John Grisham, if you read his first book that he wrote, the Mockingbird one, or the Time to Kill, when he wrote that, there's a couple scenes in there where he's like at a diner. The main character's at a diner, and he's like just sitting there, and it has nothing to do with the book at all. And I'll bet my life that John Grisham wrote part of his novel in that same diner.
Wow. Hey, do all nurses wear the same glasses?
I have plaid glasses. I don't think anybody has my plaid glasses. So I don't know.
My daughter has the same frame you have. That's why I'm teasing
those frames you. I got some beautiful.
The one on your website, the author bio.
Yeah, that one, those are broken.
Oh,
those
okay. They're gone now.
Yeah, they're gone. Say goodbye.
Okay.
I got a few pairs on Zenni Optical. Have you ever gone there?
I have not.
That's a deal in itself. Not that I'm trying to advertise for anybody else, but Zenni Optical is a on-site, you know, you get glasses, the whole set with a prescription, everything for like $10. I got myself four pairs for $60. I felt like
they can't operate in Ohio.
No, they have to opt you wherever they are. I'm sure it's in another small country somewhere.
Right. It wouldn't be here. We're very limited. Lens crafters. You have to pay somebody. I don't know.
That's where I got my last set, though. I'm so cheap that I got them online. I got four pairs. It was a pretty good deal, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, and who knows where your book, Saucy on the Side, will end up.
I hope it ends up in a bookstore. But I kept trying to get in bookstores, and since it's self-published, they won't let you in unless you sell at least 500, they told me. So get to 500, and then they'll talk to you.
Talk to Mike.
Yeah, maybe. I'm like, I'm trying to get in, but
Mike, buy 500 copies right away, will you?
I know, right now, I should just buy 500 and be done with it.
Yeah, buy them and put them and sell them on your,
your
trunk of your car. Okay, I sold 500 copies.
Yeah, that's it. Now put me in your store. But then Borders is gone. I mean, I don't think there's that many bookstores left anymore. Just Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, Books A Million.
Books A Million, but I don't even ever really go in there that much.
Nobody does.
Because people, I don't know, I think they like to get coffee when they're
reading. I don't think people want to be seen reading. It's a funny thing.
I love reading.
I know. I just
bookstores all the time, and now I can't even find one near me.
If it's on your cell phone, they'll read it.
I have a Walmart cell phone.
So there you go. You got to put everything on the cell phone. That's the only thing people are reading.
I don't even think people are reading.
Driving,
they don't know how to spell.
They're typing while they're they're weaving down the highway while they're typing.
Yeah, that reminds me. You can get my book on ebook because that's the only chance of anybody buying it these days. I mean, I can sell it online, but I think that people are going to do everything on ebooks now and computers. You're right. I think bookstores are in trouble.
Yeah.
Which is sad because, truthfully, I like actually having the paper myself. I have one of those Nook books, and I like it, but I actually like having the actual book in my hand. Because sometimes when you want to flick back and review something quickly on a book, you know what I mean? Like, you get to chapter 10, and you want to remember the guy's name from chapter 2. On those Nook books, it's not as easy to switch back as you think.
Yeah, well, so, you know, when it costs $14 to drive to the bookstore and home, yeah, that's the cost of the book.
Yeah, but you know what else? When you get on those Nook books or e-books, they're not that much cheaper. Suddenly it's $10 to be on, it's $9.95, I'm thinking. It costs you $9.95 to put them on an e-book, and there's nothing involved at all. You could buy a store for $7.95, you know? I mean, I like the e-books, but I think people are going to upset when there's no paper around.
I mean, Yeah, what? Think of all that's lost. If the computer crashes, we don't have electricity.
And you know what else?
What are we going to burn? We're going to freeze to death. We don't even have a book to burn. Come on.
You can't even burn your books. That's what I mean. I don't like that about the fact that you can't hold your book, look back on your books. I mean, I just don't really understand why people. And plus, you know, when you go to the bookstore, I like to browse. I mean, I don't browse well on computers to look up books. It's just not the same. You know, you're browsing covers only. I like to pick it up and look at the first couple pages, you know. But I guess that's going to be an old hat soon. I'm not
yeah,
sure.
Now I see a picture of the book, but not a very good one. Where am I supposed to go for a good image? Let's see.
Probably go to Infinity Publishing.
I'm on your website, JenPurcell.com. Go over there. You'll see our lovely author this hour, her life story and how it happened and the missiles and all that. You'll see that there. Then where do you buy the book? I'm looking for that
link.
You can
buy it. If you click right on that site, you can buy a book tomorrow or today, and I'll have it autographed and sent to you for Christmas. Otherwise, you could buy it on...
Where? I mean, I have to go to contact author, or where's the link for the...
No, you go to www.jenpurcell.com.
I'm there.
Okay.
Author's bio, self-publishing resources, maybe...
Christmas one?
Coming soon. I don't see any Christmas one. Blog.
Christmas oh, maybe I'm on the wrong one. Let me look. My husband's in charge of the website. I'm going to have to...
Mike, what are you doing to us? Is it JenPurcell.com, right?
www.
You have the Facebook,
you can see it on Infinity Publishing too. Infinity Publishing.
Well, that's tough. Isn't there a link on your website?
Yeah.
Where?
Let me look at it here.
Return to talk.
Right here. If you go to JenPurcell.com, special autographed copy. You're staring at it.
I am.
You click to buy.
I don't see it. I don't know. I don't know where you're looking.
I'm on www.jenpurcell.com, and it goes right to the first page, jenpurcell.com. If you go straight now, it says click to buy. Frustrated with holiday shopping? Unsure what to buy for grandma and third-party relative? Are you on that page?
Yeah, let me get rid of this other thing here and see what this is.
You might be on the author's bio page.
Yeah, who knows? It's a computer. Here we go. Let's try that. Hey, there it is.
There it is.
Hey, ooh, everyone.
There it is.
Look. And there's a forward slash after the after .com forward slash. Why are people calling me? I'm interviewing. JenPurcell.com, special autographed copy. Frustrated with holiday shopping. That was Monday. That was the day. That was no. You can anytime. Oh yeah, go online.
Well, we just started that just because a lot of my friends wanted copied. They wanted them.
$14.95, $2.95 for shipping and handling. Click to buy now. Okay, so you're on your Android, your BlackBerry, your internet, you're online. Go ahead and get the book. Go
That's
ahead.
Get it.
Go right
get
now. Go over there now. Do it.
Do it. That's
click to buy now. I'm going to click to buy now. Click to buy now. There, it's coming up. Look, it's that easy, everybody. I can buy it right now.
See, it's simple, and it's right cheaper there. To buy it from there than it is to buy it from Infinity.
It is. Oh, and now add it to the cart, Alliance Marketing Concepts, LLC. Now, how do I get the autograph copy? Through the same site?
Well, if you look for me, then I have them here, and I sign them.
Oh, you did buy. You didn't buy 500, though.
No.
Okay.
I buy them, and I'm poor.
Okay.
Okay, I buy them.
Oh, you're a starving artist. You're a starving artist.
I'm a starving artist. I buy as I go. So say if 20 people buy them, then I order 20 and send them out.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, self-published, though. So. You don't have to. That's the bad thing about self-published is you don't buy in bulk. There's no cheap way to buy it. It's not like you get 1,000 free copies. You see what I'm saying? They don't do that anymore. If you order one, they print one. You order two, they print two. That's why the cost is higher than I'd like it. Trust me, when I made it, I wanted it to be cheaper. I wanted it to be as cheap as possible. And this is the cheapest they would give me through the printing company, because that's how much, you know, I guess Infinity wants to make a buck, and then they tell you that this is as low as, what happens is no matter how many pages you have, if it says between like 1,500, then you pay $9.95. If it's, you know, 200, 300, it's $17, whatever. They tell you the price. You don't get to make your price.
What a racket.
I know, and I don't really care, because I guess it's better than nothing, because I didn't have anything else I could do. But then I found out you can go online yourself right to Amazon and do your own, make your own book there.
Are you going
to
try that?
I might, but I'm going to do it with my next book, which is really awesome. This book is going to be great. It's called The Dirty Mermaid. It's going to be finished in a couple weeks, and then I'm going to, this next year, I'm going to send it out to all the book, you know, like the book, what are they called, when they try to, petitions, all the book competitions for the publishers. And if I don't sell it in a year to somebody, then I'm going to self-publish my book. And this one I'll do just through Amazon instead of Infinity, because Infinity or any of the private ones, then they kind of bulk up the price for themselves, you know, because everybody's trying to make a living. But I guess if you go through Amazon, it's a lot. You can do it for cheaper, and even the revisions aren't expensive, because to sell your book, maybe you, and blah, 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 cost you this much money. Anytime you want to change or make mistakes, then you have to change mistakes. So the first time I get it back, it's fantastic, and then I read it, and I shoot, I have 150 seconds before I got to page 50. So then I call them, I said, how much is it if I wanted to change everything? They said, well, it costs a lot right at this. And then after that, for every 50 errors, I had to pay $50. But after a while, you're like, you know what? I'm not paying for this to get changed again. But when it's in book form, you don't realize how many, when you see something typed on a piece of paper, it looks so much different than if you.
Did we lose our guest? It's a cell phone. I bet you we did. Are you there, Jen Purcell? I think we lost her. I'm going to try to call her back. How's that, audience? I will, because people are saying some unusual things about our guest. And, listen to that. Okay, so let me find something that you can tolerate while I call our guest. And I want to play. No, I don't want to play that. What do I want to play? How about this? Thank you. Anyway, this is Authors First with Tony Kaye in the studio, and Jen is on a cell phone. Are you with us now, Jen Purcell?
Yeah, sorry. I was talking, and I'm like, wait a minute, I don't think anybody's there.
I know. Well, it's a cell phone. We're all used to it out there, so don't worry. Everyone has the experience of dropped calls and dropped internet access, you name it. This was an excellent book, very interesting characters, a surprise ending. Language could be a little offensive to someone not used to such language, but it fit the characters and storyline. Once involved in the reading, couldn't put it down and didn't want it to end. Recommend the book highly, Linda J. Okay, hey, that's a complete stranger. Or did you pay her?
No, I didn't pay her.
Oh, but she's not a complete stranger.
No, but she's the one that I wanted her to write. She said to me she wanted to write something. I said, well, write what you think, because there is a lot of swearing in the book. And I actually, when I first wrote it, I have a swearing issue myself. I probably have Tourette's without undiagnosed. But anyway, the bottom line is my mother read it, and she said, Jen, all your characters can't swear that much. Not every single character can have a swearing problem. So I went through and I took out half the swears, and then I kept some because of the characters. Some of the characters, that's just the characters, they have to do it. But I have this, like I said, I live in North Carolina, and we...
Oh, no, we lost her again. you got to love these cell phones, audience. Tony Kaye in the studio, Authors First, trying to make connection with Jen Purcell, our guest this hour. Fascinating book, Saucy on the Side. What a great personality and a wonderful read. Let me see if I can find her again before the show. Before this show ends, okay? Let's see if I can do that, all right? So don't go away. Jen Purcell on the Artist First Radio Network. Jen, you with me?
Yeah.
My son, Richie, wrote this music. Can you hear it?
Yeah, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, he spent a year in India, and it had an influence on him. But he is a professional sitar player and one of our engineers here at Artist First, and this is one of his works. So thank you for allowing me to torture the audience with this music
while we waited for you.
How you doing, Jen?
Good. So what I was saying is my friend Linda was not my friend when she read the book. She was, I work in the ER. I work in the emergency room with about 20 girls, and she had just started the day before, and I made her read it. And she liked it because she didn't really know me. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't like I even knew her that well. But she didn't like, she said the language was rough, but she didn't care. But I have a friend of mine, because like I said, I live in North Carolina, and we go to this lake. And everybody down here there's a lot of Baptists. Everybody's very religious, and obviously I'm not very religious. And one of our little ladies on the lake wanted to read it, and she's very religious. I'm like, oh, Miss Elaine, I don't know if you should read it. This is probably not your book. And she read it, and she liked it, but she said, yes, that she would rather not have as much swearing. So in the next book that I'm doing in North Carolina, I took out the swearing just for the White Lake crowd.
Well, I think that's wise. It broadens your audience. You can have young teens to...
Well, this book that I just wrote, it's the character. The guys are like mafia kind of guys. It's just the way they speak. I mean, it comes with the book. But you're right. In the next book, I have a little bit of swearing, but only one character. There's one character that's got a little bit of potty mouth, and she's a very limited character. So I figured that way I wouldn't get too many parents upset, you know. Because you're right. I think it does limit the audience a little bit, but... The way the book reads, it sounds natural when they say it, but it's a Boston-based novel. And I don't know if you've ever been to Boston, but people in Boston have hard accents and a lot of swearing. It's just how they talk. And not everybody, obviously, but my crowd, obviously.
Yeah, I understand, and that's okay. We can accept that. We have room for everyone on Artists First. So that it's interesting how our backgrounds, where we grow up, the people that we run with, our education, our habits, all influence the way that we develop our characters and write. And so quite naturally, you're going to write in the vernacular you feel comfortable with and thinking about on a daily basis.
That's right, because when I was in Boston, I mean, I was in the restaurant business. Everything was, when I read it, if you ever read it, if you ever get a chance to read it, there's a lot of drinking. Everybody's worried about their weight all the time, or smoking. And when I was in my 20s, we drank, we smoked, and we were always on diets. I mean, truthfully, that's what we did. And we went out all the time, because when you're in the restaurant business, that's what you do. You go out. You go out every night, you know? And then now, in the next book, there's a lot more kid involvement, you know, like I actually have my kids to do a little guest star appearance in the next book where they're on the beach when they find the main character's almost drowned and they find her and they drag her in, and my three sons and my niece, they're the characters, even though it's just for about, you know, two pages, but it's just, I would have never put kids in the first book because I didn't know anything about kids whatsoever because I was so into my own little 20s world where all that we did was sleep late, get up, and then go out, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it changes when you start having the children.
And then people in the ER, the funniest thing is, like, I am such the opposite of the ER. I mean, everybody looks at me when I tell them stories, because people in the medical field are really, you know, they're pretty good people. They didn't do anything bad. I mean, maybe they did a couple bad things, but I think I, like, kind of went from one end of the rainbow to the other. You know, I was like, always out, always a delinquent child. The next thing you know, I'm in an emergency room taking care of the people that I probably was 10 years ago. But anyway, it's kind of funny. So when I started the next book, I tried to tone it down and change my ways a little bit, but I think it's in this book there's a little bit more medicine involved and a little bit more medical aspects.
I was going to ask you that question.
Do you think
that the now that you have this a decade under your belt working in this profession, that some of that would creep into your books?
Actually, I started one that I haven't finished yet, but I still have the idea for it. It's going to be called The Liver Chronicles. That was one of my books that I have in my, you know, list to be done. And it's going to be my personal evaluation between nursing and bartending. And truthfully, it's not that much different, except for one, you're serving them shots, and one, you're jamming a shot in their butt. So I just, everybody laughs at me, like, what do you mean it's the same thing? I'm like, it's a lot. It's all about managing your time. There's not much different. I mean, it's just what you know. You just know different things. But you have to still multitask and do the same stuff, you know, and you just don't get tipped when you're a nurse. You just get yelled at. I don't know what to say.
Or get your ass pinched.
Yeah. Yeah, one or the other, exactly. But at least with waitressing, you got to wear platform shoes and cute makeup. I mean, the nurse, nobody cares. Nobody cares what you're
and get your ass pinched. Yeah,
yeah,
I understand.
Right.
Yeah, I understand. Some things don't change.
No, some things don't.
Saucy on the side.
Younger than somebody, even in a hospital, you know.
Did you agonize a lot with Saucy on the Side? Do you think that first book really took a lot out of you in the sense that you had to struggle and learn, then maneuver your way through the publishing industry?
Well, what it did was maybe a better writer, I think, when I decided to self-publish, because like I said, you start looking at it like, wow, is this, because I kept thinking I was under this like impression that I could send it to an agent, they'd say, oh, what a great idea, let me fix that for you, you know, and that they'd take it and they'd fix it and that would be it, I'd be there. And then I realized that, no, I'm lucky if they read the first four pages when you send it to an agent. You can't even get people to read it these days, let alone love it and fix it for you. So it was agonizing to me because it became a quest, that book. I felt like I couldn't go anywhere until that one was finished. And that my friend said, why don't you just my husband's the one that said self-publish. And I said, you know what, maybe I will, just to get it done. You know what I mean? I just wanted one done, because now the second one, it doesn't seem so life shattering.
Yeah, it wasn't as daunting, you know, the process.
Yeah.
You feel comfortable with it. Now you could focus more on what you enjoy doing, and that's writing, and less on the structure of what next.
But it is the daunting part is the writing. Is the writing is great at the beginning. You know, you're inventing, you're making stuff up, you know, it's really fun. But as soon as you're on the second and third revision, it's not fun anymore. There's nothing fun about it. I mean, you're like, why have I done this to myself? Because you look at that same paragraph and you're like, I can't use that word look 15 times, or, you know, you use the same words over and over again, and you're like, this doesn't sound good. And you just want to change it, and you don't know how to fix it. You know, you'd like to have a second person, but I promise you, when you try to get someone to help you, a lot of people say they'll help you, and a lot of people, they just don't have the time. I mean, there's so much time to edit that even if your friend says, yes, I'll do it for you, your friend has got a life. Unless you're going to pay her $2,000, you know, she's not going to sit down and do it as quick as you think. So what I started doing is I started giving all my friends like 10 pages each, because everybody can do 10 pages. That's your only chance. And that way they don't question the storyline either, because truthfully, everybody's going to tell you what they think about the storyline, which is fine when you want that. But when you're just trying to get the story out there and finished and just get the basics down, you don't really want people telling you what's better or worse, because they don't know the rest of the story. All they know is those 10 pages. But they will tell you when the structure of the sentence is really way off. So it's actually helped me to do it that way better. And that way people get it done. I mean, I give someone 10 pages. I have a lot of ER nurses that have done this for me. And they are excited about it because it's 10 pages. They can do it in a weekend and be done with it, bring it back to me, and then I'm happy. We read it over, and I agree with them most of the time, and sometimes I can see where they're going, and then I switch it and change it and probably cause another couple errors. But, you know, that's the joy of writing, one revision after the other. Truthfully.
But they must be good friends because they don't mind doing it.
Well, you know what it is they didn't want – everybody wanted to do it after I finished the first one. Suddenly I had the first one in print, and one of my friends, her aunt came over and was – sitting in the living room, and she was reading the book, and my friend goes, where'd you get that? And she goes, out of your bag. And she goes, oh, I thought you picked it up somewhere. And she said that she started reading it, and she liked it. And her aunt's like, I love this book. And my friend hadn't even picked it up yet. But since her aunt liked it, suddenly she wanted to read it. Because it was the strangers that read it first. The strangers have been better for me than my friends, truthfully. Because they're not trying to read into it too much. They're just trying to read it like a story. And when your friends read it, they're trying to pick it apart as opposed to just reading it. Just read it. You know, I'm not expecting you to get a, you know, big award for my first book, but when you think it's going to be this big thing, I just want you to read the story and see what you think about it without thinking I wrote it. Pretend I didn't write it, you know? But so because of that, then all of a sudden everybody, whoa, Jen wrote a book. Oh, we want to help you. But nobody wanted to help me the first time, I promise you. Even though they say they want to, you know, they just don't have the time.
Congratulations on taking the time to write and put out these books. I think it's tremendous. I believe that your children, your husband, everyone around you have to be thoroughly impressed with your genius and your tenacity to push forward and make these projects a reality. And I want to thank you, Jen, for being our guest on Authors First. Tony Kay in the studio, it's been my privilege to introduce you to our audience. We wish you the very best for the holiday season and your future as an author, and we look forward to your return and much success on Saucy on the Side. It's been a treat talking to you about this whole process of putting the book together. Before I let you go, anyone out there, Jen, that you'd like to say hello to, or any closing remarks for our audience?
I just want to say thanks for letting me be on your show, and I want to say hi to my sons, Ethan, Killian, and Harry, and Mike, and everybody at the hospital that are listening at Duke Raleigh and Wake Med, and that's it. I got nothing.